All right, so data, big data.
Big data.
If you're at CMU, I bet you're dealing with a lot of it.
Oh, absolutely.
In your classes, and if you're in, stats or ML or AI or any of those,
Especially.
any of those data-heavy fields, this is for you.
For sure.
We recently went to this great workshop by Yob Dagnachu and Clemental, all about big data.
Yeah, they had some really good slides.
Really good slides, and we're going to take a deep dive into them. And so we're not just going to summarize them, though. I mean, we will. We're
Right.
connecting back to your studies here at CMU and really try to figure out the why behind all of the methods.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing to know the terms, but like really understanding them and why you would use one over the other, that's where things get really interesting.
Totally, totally.
Yeah.
So slide three kicks us off with kind of this classic machine learning refresher. They go over regression, classification, features, labels, like all the stuff we know.
Right, the basics.
Yeah, the basics.
Yeah.
And they have this really cool visual of data flowing through a method, like an email getting tagged as spam or not spam. It's like
Yeah.
super simple.
It is until it's not.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, think about like when you have a ton of data,
Okay.
like we're not talking about your little email inbox anymore.
Right.
We're talking about like Facebook's daily logs, right? Slide 8 says that's something like 60 terabytes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of data.
That's a lot.
And that's when traditional machine learning methods really start to break down.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
So how do we even think about this big data problem?
Right.
Like, how do we even visualize it?
Well, so slide 7 uses this rectangle to represent data, and they use K for the number of features, right?
Okay.
And N for the number of observations. So first, let's imagine that K, the number of features, just explodes.
Okay.
Like we're talking thousands, maybe millions of columns in your data set.
Okay, and that's a problem
Yeah.
because
That's a problem because of something called the curse of dimensionality. And they talk about that on slide 9. And it's not just that things get slow.
Okay.
You also run the risk of overfitting your model,
Right.
which basically means it becomes really good at like memorizing the training data, but then when you give it something new, it just totally fails.
Right. I've definitely seen that in my
Oh
projects.
yeah, for sure.
Like overfitting is a real problem.
It is.
So how do we fight back?
Well, feature selection.
Okay.
Feature selection is key.
Okay.
So slide 4 talks about a few of these techniques, things like mutual information ranking, which helps you figure out which features are actually giving you useful information about whatever you're trying to predict.
Right.
Then there's correlation analysis, which helps you get rid of redundant features that are basically saying the same thing.
Okay.
And then, of course, there's PCA, which
I
is
see it,
it's
right?
a little more complicated, but super powerful.
We hear that one a lot, but I'm not sure everyone really gets it.
Right.
Can you break that down a bit more?
Sure. So imagine you have a data set with all these features, right?
Okay.
And they're all kind of correlated with each other. What PCA does is it's like, hey, let's find some new features that are combinations of the old ones, but in a way that captures like as much of the variation in the data as possible.
Okay.
Like think of it as squeezing the juice out of those original features.
Okay.
You're getting the essence of what they represent, but in a more compact form.
Got it. Got it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So we've tackled K, the features, but what about when N, the number of observations, gets out of control?
Yeah, so slide 10 points out that even like algorithms with ON complexity,
Right.
which is usually considered pretty efficient, can become really slow when you're dealing with like billions of data
Yeah,
points.
it's like trying to drive a Ferrari in rush hour. It
Exactly.
doesn't really matter how fast your car can go
Nope.
when you're surrounded by tons of other cars.
Exactly. You're stuck.
Yeah.
So what do? We have to get creative.
Okay, I like it.
Yeah.
Create a solution.
Creative solutions.
Likewise.
So one approach is to use something called stochastic gradient descent or SGD
Okay.
instead of regular gradient descent. And it's kind of like taking the express lane instead of like the local roads.
Okay.
So instead of calculating the gradient using the entire data set, SGD just uses a small batch of data at each iteration.
So it's faster.
Yeah, it's much faster.
Okay, but what's the catch?
Well, the trade-off is that the path to the optimal solution with SGD is a bit more jittery.
Okay.
Like, imagine you're taking a shortcut through a forest, right? You might get there faster, but you might also trip over some roots or branches along the way.
I see.
GD, on the other hand, is more like taking the paved road slower but smoother.
Got it.
Yeah.
So it's about speed versus precision.
Exactly.
I can see how that would be a tough choice,
It is
depending on the problem. Are there
absolutely.
any other tricks we can use?
Yeah, so another option is to just use a smaller subset of the data.
Okay.
And this is called subsampling.
Subsampling.
It can be a real lifesaver when you have these massive data sets,
Right.
but you have to be really careful about how you choose that subset.
Yeah, I can
Yeah, if
imagine.
you're not careful,
Right.
you could end up with a model that's totally biased and inaccurate.
Totally.
It's like if you were trying to do a poll, right? And you only asked people in one specific neighborhood,
Right.
you're not going to get a good sense of what the whole city thinks.
You're only going to get the opinion of that one neighborhood.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
What about parallelization?
Oh, parallelization.
That seems to be a hot topic, at least here at CMU.
Yeah, it is.
Seems like a lot of labs are working on that.
It's basically the divide and conquer strategy of big data.
Okay.
So instead of trying to do everything on one machine,
Right.
you split the work up. And you send it out to multiple processors or machines,
Okay.
like a team effort.
So more of a team effort. I like it.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing there are different ways to go about this.
Yeah, there are.
Okay.
Slide 10 talks about two main approaches.
Okay.
Multi-core processing, which is kind of like having a team of workers all sharing the same workspace.
Okay.
And then there are distributed systems,
Okay.
which is more like having multiple teams working in different locations,
Right.
but they're all coordinating their efforts.
Gotcha. So which approach is better?
That really depends on the problem you're trying to solve and what kind of resources you have available.
Okay.
So if you have a single machine with multiple cores,
Right.
multi-core processing can be great,
Right.
but for truly massive data sets,
Yeah.
you really need distributed systems.
I see. So it's like
It's like,
if you're building a house, you might be able to get away with a small team.
right,
But if
exactly.
you're building a skyscraper, you need a whole bunch of teams working together.
You need specialists
Yeah,
working together.
exactly.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. And that kind of leads us into this idea of scaling up, which slide 11 talks about.
Okay.
And they have this visual of one big machine, which seems pretty
Yeah, if you
intuitive.
need more power, just get a bigger computer.
Exactly. Like, why not just buy the most powerful machine you can and just crush all your data?
Right.
But they mentioned some drawbacks,
Okay, what are those?
like hitting a wall.
Hitting a wall, what do you mean?
So imagine you're trying to, I don't know, stuff an elephant into a Mini Cooper.
Okay.
At some point, no matter how hard you push, it's not going to fit.
Right.
And that's kind of the limitation of scaling up.
I see.
Like, eventually you hit the physical limits of what a single machine can handle.
Right. Even a supercomputer, there's a limit.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Plus, those high-end machines are super expensive.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like a brute force solution,
Right.
which isn't always the best.
Okay, so what's the alternative?
Well, slide 12 introduces this idea of scaling out.
Okay.
And instead of relying on one super powerful machine,
Right.
you create a network of machines that work together.
Okay.
So it's kind of like harnessing the power of, I don't know, an ant colony.
Okay.
Like each individual ant might be small, but together they can do amazing things.
Yeah, they can lift like 50 times their body weight or something.
Exactly.
That's crazy.
So instead of having one giant processor,
Right.
you have a bunch of smaller ones all working in parallel.
Got it. And this is where distributed systems come in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Distributed systems let you spread the workload across multiple machines so you can tackle those massive data sets that would choke a single machine.
Right.
Plus, you can use commodity hardware,
Okay.
which is way cheaper than those specialized high-end
Right,
machines.
so it's more cost effective.
Exactly.
Okay, but I bet managing a whole network of machines adds a whole new layer of complexity. Like, I remember the mentioned something about software challenges on slide 12.
Yeah, it's definitely not as simple as just plugging in a bunch of computers and hitting go.
Right.
You have to think about things like how do these machines communicate with each other?
Right.
How do you keep the data in sync across all these machines? And what happens if one of your machines just crashes in the middle of a computation?
Ooh, yeah, that would be bad.
It
So
would.
you need systems that can handle that kind of stuff.
Exactly. You need systems that are fault tolerant.
Fault tolerant, okay.
Yeah, and that's where like a deep understanding of distributed systems principles comes in,
Right.
which is something that courses like 15, 7, 12 here at CMU really dive into.
Yeah, that's a great class for anyone who wants to like really understand how to build and manage these distributed systems.
Absolutely.
So we're kind of trading one set of challenges for another,
Right.
but at least with distributed systems,
Yeah.
we have the potential to tackle problems that would be impossible on a single machine.
Exactly. And that brings us to Hadoop, which is one of the, I guess, most famous frameworks for distributed computing.
Yeah, Hadoop, that name keeps popping up everywhere.
It
But I'll
does.
admit, I'm still not totally clear on what it is.
So think of Hadoop as like the operating system for your distributed data center.
Okay.
It's a way to store and process these massive data sets across a cluster of machines.
Okay.
And slide 13 really emphasizes this MapReduce paradigm, which is kind of at the heart of Hadoop.
MapReduce.
Yeah.
I feel like I've heard that term thrown around a lot,
It is.
but I don't know if I really get it.
Yeah, so MapReduce is basically a way of breaking down a big computation into smaller, more manageable pieces
Okay.
that can be executed in parallel.
Right.
So the map step involves applying some function to each individual data element,
Okay.
and the reduce step then combines the results from all those map steps to produce the final output.
Okay, so it's like having a bunch of chefs all chopping vegetables at the same time. And
Exactly.
then someone comes along at the end and combines all those chopped veggies into a big salad.
Perfect analogy.
That's MapReduce.
Yeah.
Got it.
And slide 14 gives this concrete example of like counting words in a massive document.
Okay.
Imagine trying to do that on a single machine, it would take forever.
Right.
But with MapReduce, you can split the document up, have each machine count the words in its little section,
Right.
and then you combine the results to get the total word count.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So Hadoop and MapReduce really changed how we deal with big data.
Oh, absolutely. It was a game changer.
But slide 15 mentions that Hadoop relies on disk access for fault tolerance.
Right.
And they point out that disk access is like 50 times slower than RAM access.
It
That
is.
seems like a pretty big bottleneck.
It was, and that's where Spark comes in,
Okay, Spark.
which was developed around 2014, and it was really designed to address those limitations of Hadoop's reliance on disk.
I see. So it's like upgrading from a horse and buggy to a bullet train.
Yeah.
Okay, so how does Spark use RAM differently?
So one key difference is that Spark uses in-memory processing whenever possible,
Okay.
while Hadoop primarily relies on disk storage.
Right.
So think of it this way. If you need to access some information frequently,
Yeah.
it's much faster to keep it on your desk, right, than to have to go retrieve it from a filing cabinet every time.
All right, that makes sense.
Yeah. So Spark tries to keep the data it's working on in RAM,
Got it.
which is like having everything right at your fingertips.
Okay, that explains the speed boost.
Exactly.
But they also mentioned something called lazy evaluation.
Yes, lazy evaluation.
What is that?
It's basically one of Spark's secret weapons for efficiency.
Okay.
And it means that Spark only actually performs computations when they're absolutely necessary.
Oh,
So
interesting.
instead of like eagerly computing everything up front,
Right.
it waits until the very last moment and only calculates what it needs to produce the final result.
So it's like a master procrastinator, but
Exactly.
in a good way.
But in a good way.
Okay, I like it.
It avoids doing any extra work,
Right.
which saves time and resources.
So Spark was a pretty big step forward.
It was,
Yeah.
yeah. And it's still growing in popularity because it can be used for all sorts of things.
Right, like machine learning,
Machine learning.
data
Yeah.
analysis, real-time stream processing.
Pretty much anything you can think of.
Okay, so we've gone from scaling up to scaling out, from Hadoop to Spark.
Yeah.
It seems like this field of big data is always changing.
It is. It's constantly evolving.
Yeah, there are always new frameworks coming out, new
Always.
techniques, new
It can be
challenges.
a little overwhelming.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's also really exciting.
It is exciting.
Yeah.
What are some of the other trends you see on the horizon? Slide 16 talks about a few.
Okay, well, one really exciting area is scalable deep learning.
Okay.
So researchers are figuring out how to train these massive deep learning models on huge data sets.
Wow.
And it's really pushing the boundaries of AI.
Deep learning is definitely a hot topic, especially here at CMU.
It is.
And then there are LLMs, large language models.
Yes,
They
LLMs.
seem to be everywhere these days.
They
They
are.
can generate human quality text.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
And they're being used for everything from chatbots to code generation.
It's amazing what they can do.
It is mind-blowing, but also kind of scary.
Yeah, it's a powerful technology.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So what about the hardware side of things?
Yeah.
What are some of the hardware trends that are enabling all these advances?
So GPUs. Graphics processing units are playing a huge role.
Okay.
They were originally designed for graphics rendering,
Right.
but it turns out they're really good at the kind of parallel computations that are at the heart of deep learning.
So they're like the workhorses of the deep learning revolution.
Exactly.
Okay.
And with cloud computing becoming more and more accessible,
right,
it's easier than ever to get your hands on these powerful GPUs.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's making this technology more accessible to everyone.
Exactly. It's democratizing access to these powerful tools.
Sounds like anyone can do deep learning now.
Pretty much.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, it is.
But slide 16 also mentions federated learning.
Yes.
Which seems like a big deal, especially with all the, you know, concerns about data privacy.
Absolutely.
Like, can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So federated learning is a really cool way to train machine learning models on data that's spread out across lots of different devices.
Okay.
Without actually having to collect all that data in one place.
Wait, so you can train a model without ever seeing the data?
Yeah, kind of.
How does that work?
So it's like, imagine you have a bunch of students all studying the same textbook,
okay,
but they're taking their notes independently.
Okay.
Instead of gathering all the notes in one place,
uh-huh,
you just share the like model parameters,
right,
which are kind of like the key takeaways from the textbook.
Got it.
With each student, they update the model based on their own local data,
right,
and then they send back their updated parameters.
Got it.
And you aggregate all those updates to improve the overall model.
That's really clever.
It is.
So you're basically learning from the collective wisdom of the crowd.
Exactly.
Without compromising anyone's individual privacy.
That's the idea.
It's like something out of a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, it's pretty futuristic.
So where is this being used in the real world?
So, you know those smartphone keyboards that learn from your typing habits?
Yeah.
They can use federated learning to do that without actually sending your personal data to, like, Google or Apple.
Oh, why?
And it has huge potential in healthcare, too.
Okay, how so?
So you could train models on sensitive patient data,
mm-hmm,
without ever having to move that data outside of the hospitals or clinics where it's stored.
That's amazing.
It is.
So federated learning could really revolutionize how we handle sensitive data.
I think so.
Okay, what about new frameworks? Are there any emerging tools or platforms that you're particularly excited about?
Yeah, so there's Ray, which was actually developed here at Berkeley,
right,
at the RISE lab.
Uh-huh.
And it's a really powerful framework for building and running distributed applications.
Okay.
It's become really popular because it's super flexible.
Right.
And it can handle a lot of different workloads.
Like what kind of workloads?
So everything from machine learning to scientific computing.
Oh, wow.
So it's kind of like a Swiss Army knife for distributed computing.
I like it.
Yeah. And then there's Dask, which is another great framework.
Dask.
It lets you scale out your Python workflows.
Okay.
And work with data sets that are bigger than your computer's memory.
Right. That's a problem I run into all the time.
Yeah, it's a common one.
My computer just crashes.
Yeah.
So Dask can help with that.
Dask can definitely help with that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. And it's really popular with scientists.
Why is that?
Because it can handle these large numerical arrays and do parallel computations.
So it's perfect for scientific research.
Exactly.
Okay. So it seems like the big takeaway here is that big data is always evolving.
It is. Yeah.
There's always something new to learn.
Always.
New tools to master.
Yeah.
New challenges to tackle.
It's a constantly moving target.
Yeah, it can be a bit overwhelming, but it's also super exciting.
Oh, for sure.
So what advice would you give to our listeners who are maybe feeling a bit intimidated by all of this?
I would say just stay curious.
Okay.
Keep learning.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be afraid to jump into the unknown.
Right.
That's really what it's all about.
I love it.
Yeah.
This has been a really insightful deep dive into the Big Data Workshop.
Yes.
I feel like we've just scratched the surface.
Yeah, we definitely have.
But it's made me even more curious to learn more.
That's great to hear.
So to all our listeners out there.
Yeah.
Whether you're just starting out in data science, or you're already deep in the trenches of, you know, a challenging course.
Yeah.
Just remember that CMU has a ton of resources to support you.
Absolutely.
You know, don't be afraid to reach out to professors, TAs,
yeah,
your fellow students.
For sure.
And most importantly, keep that spark of curiosity burning.
That's the most important thing.
That's what drives innovation.
Absolutely.
And that's what pushes the boundaries of what's possible.
That's what it's all about.
So on that note, that's a wrap for this episode.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It was fun.
Until next time, keep learning, keep exploring, and keep pushing the boundaries of what you can achieve with data.